Good day, Internet.
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 I just flew back from Illinois, and boy, are my arms tired. Those are unrelated. My arms are tired from moving a lot of things and carrying them around, but it is so true. I mean,
you got a great reward for the help, though, right?
I sure did. We'll talk about that in GDI. Don't let me forget to bring that up.
Definitely.
All right, here we go. In 3, 2. This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you, the listener. Thank you, including Jeff Wilkes, Paley Glendale, and Dr. X17. Coming up on DTNS, one of the founders of neural networks has some serious concerns about the future of the models he helped create, but some of those models are helping doctors. Plus, can you be too afraid of public USB chargers? Yeah, good. Thanks. Yeah, you can. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, May the 1st, International Labor Day, 2023. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
From lovely Cleveland, Ohio, I'm Rich Schiraffolino.
And from the D.C. area, I am Chris Ashley.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
My friends and neighbors, it is good to be back in the saddle again. We got some good news, we got some bad news, and we got some maybe it's good and bad news. So let's start with the quick hits. ARM disclosed it confidentially submitted draft F1 form to the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is its first step towards a U.S. stock market listing. They're going to finally IPO ARM. Remember, NVIDIA wanted to buy ARM, but that fell through last year. So after that, SoftBank said it planned to take ARM public. ARM designs are, of course, used in just about every mobile device you can find on the market, including a bunch of laptops.
Last month, Microsoft began rolling out chatbot integration into its SwiftKey Android keyboard. I mean, it's putting its chatbot in a lot of places, SwiftKey among them. And now it's coming to the Galaxy, the SwiftKey team, One UI, and it's the default. You can, of course, switch it, but it's on every Samsung device.
So they're tailoring SwiftKey to Samsung?
Hard pass.
Amazon's free ad-supported Freevee streaming service will add more than 100 Amazon original series and movies from its Prime Video service over the course of the year. In some instances, Amazon will not provide a full season of an original show on Freevee, just kind of a taste. And don't worry, the originals are staying on Prime Video. So if you pay for Prime Video or if you get it with your Prime subscription, those will stay there and they will be ad-free.
CEO Elon Musk tweeted that in May, Twitter will allow media publishers to charge users on a per-article basis with one click. He said the price would be higher per article versus, you know, if you just paid for a full subscription, but would still give you some access. More details are yet to come, including kind of major things like whether Twitter would take a commission or, you know, what kind of accounts would be able to offer the feature if they need to be verified, what badges they would need to have, all of that yet to come.
Meta will hold its third annual Quest Gaming Showcase on June 1st, promising over 40 minutes of content related to new VR games. The stream starts at 12:45 Eastern on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, and inside the Horizon Worlds platform.
All right, well, toot toot all aboard the AI generative hype train. It's still very much accelerating. We're seeing more of it every single day. Thank you, Conductor Tom, for making sure we're all registered here. But one of the things that we keep hearing about this technology, we hear about new models, use cases. That's kind of where this stuff is going to actually really start impacting our lives. One place they could make a big difference, the healthcare sector. And this isn't just idle speculation and kind of navel-gazing. Doctors at UC San Diego Health and the University of Wisconsin Health have been testing GPT-3 integration since last month. So what are they using it for? Well, to generate drafts to a limited number of questions, things like pulling in and that have the ability to pull in patient information. These often do require some editing, but they provide a good starting point most of the time, at least according to the reporting that we've seen. There's also a new study in the journal JAMA Internal Medicine that took questions already answered by verified doctors on the subreddit Ask Docs and answered them using ChatGPT. So the ChatGPT responses were compared to the human ones by a team of five medical professionals who didn't know which ones were machine generated. It was completely blind. They just generated the quality of those responses. And it's really important to note, it's they were not submitted to the subreddit. They were just only used for the study. The study not only found more AI responses ranked well for quality, but interestingly, also for empathy compared to the human ones. So, you know, Chris, it's AI, it's health. Should this scare people?
I you know, often I find myself conflicted when we see some of these articles about the direction they're traveling in. However, this one is no different.
You fooled us. You fooled us.
That's the swerve.
So while on one hand, I think everybody listening to this show has had somebody or themselves looked at WebMD and felt like they were dying. Like, oh, WebMD said it's over. At the same time, so, well, first, the fact that this can probably provide a much more intelligent answer and a much more streamlined answer to common questions, as well as help with the efficiency of getting answers from your doctors. I think that aspect of it is really, really cool. But of course, on the other side of it is, you know, we find ourselves looking at our healthcare system more and more and seeing how it's a lot more profit motive embedded in there. And so you can't help but want hope that this is not the direction that they're using this for to reduce the amount of doctors on hand, but yet use it to be provide better answers and better services for people. So I am once again conflicted over this, but, you know, overall, so far, I do like what I've seen as far as the study is concerned.
As far as what I remember, the healthcare sector has a shortage of workers. So I'm not doubting that the profit is not a motive. Of course it would be, but this is going to help fill in gaps in coverage because they don't have enough people too. So there's an upside there. I think it's worth pointing out that the study that used the Reddit stuff was just an evaluation to say, let's see if the responses are good. And it turned out to be better than they expected. That isn't the same as like, now let's use them to treat people. It was more like, okay, right, now we know they're good. Let's figure out what we should use them for. And the San Diego and Wisconsin study is separate, or a separate situation rather, is saying, let's use them for the non-medical stuff. Let's use them for, I need to fill out this form. Where do I get this form? Can I get my prescription renewed? You know, where do I get my prescription, et cetera? The stuff that is more procedural, which then would free doctors to actually spend more time treating patients.
Yeah, that aspect I do like.
Well, and one of the things that really stood out is like that whole question of empathy, right? Because that is extraordinarily important in any kind of clinical setting, or at least the perception of empathy, right? Where we don't doubt that the doctor maybe, you know, wants our best medical outcome or something like that, but like the interaction feels rushed or for whatever like that. Obviously, this is just a first step to seeing how these tools can be used. But the Wall Street Journal had some interesting stats about like just like what the medical field is kind of like when they're looking at, you know, kind of post-pandemic, we're seeing like burnout of like 62% of physicians. And this came from a Mayo Clinic study. And so like significantly up from kind of pre-pandemic levels, combined with more and more patients also like kind of looking for electronic medical records, using MyChart and stuff like that. Queries are up like 60% over the last couple of years. So those two things of, even if given the same number of doctors available, more people kind of seeking these quick answer to these questions. Chris, to your point, you know, WebMD kind of being the internet comment section of health that, you know, is just like a distressing hellscape, and actually getting reliable medical information like could be extraordinarily not just valuable in terms of time, but also for like health outcomes. And we're going to need a lot more of these studies to go like, okay, now we know that theoretically, we have one study that shows these theoretically can do this. The next step is to say, okay, like, how can we design these so that we're not like generating?
Yeah, what can you do with that, right? The study isn't about the design. The study is about like, okay, it's worth something. Now everybody figure out what it's good at. And that's what I like the Wisconsin and San Diego health demonstrations. The way they described it was they get a message from one of their clients, one of their patients, and the chatbot would suggest a response based on the message that was using, again, locally accessed health records. So there's no HIPAA violation. It's not going out on a network. It's the doctor that already has it. And the chatbot is running locally and says, like, based on this patient's history, here's what I would recommend telling them. The doctor shouldn't just press send and doesn't just press send. The doctor then looks at that and says, okay, this is a great draft. Let me adapt it. But it's still faster. It's an aid in answering these messages. And I could see a better WebMD coming out of this, where sure. WebMD is always going to show you every single disease, right? Like, if you had one that's like, you probably don't have these because we know your medical history, I think right. that helps.
Yeah, and I think that the aspect of this that I find somewhat exciting is, I did an interview with Brandon Watson, a good friend of our podcast, a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things he talked about is how he's been programming against ChatGPT to help with his interview at a company. And essentially what he was finding was the AI was picking up nuances in the interviews that he was missing.
Mm-hmm.
So I could definitely see that sort of thing take place as well here, where maybe a doctor missed something
right.
What the patient is presenting to them, but the chat bot or the AI can pick up on what they missed. So I would, as long as they kind of work these things in conjunction, doctor and AI, I really like where this could potentially go and what the study is showing that it could do.
And the other thing to think about is that the JAMA study was looking at ChatGPT, the thing that you can log in and use mm-hmm, right now, mm-hmm. This very generalized tool. This is not something that was trained to be used in a medical setting. And that's what I think is exciting. Like, ChatGPT, again, is the tech demo of all of this
yes,
stuff.
Right.
Extraordinarily powerful tech demo. But like, when we can take this and say, we need this to we know how like clinical encounters work. We have like tons of like cultural studies about like what leads to good health outcomes, what leads to people not telling doctors stuff. And we can build, like, the idea is we could build very specific models to take those kind of things into account. We'll probably come up with all sorts of different other shortcomings as well.
ChatGPT is like saying, like, if it's any good at all. And that's what this thing found out. Yes. Like, oh, it actually is. Imagine if we tried to make the tool for right. this purpose. Yeah.
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 All right. Let's move on to Ars Technica's Dan Gooden has a nice piece on Ars Technica on the prevalence of juice jacking stories since the FBI issued its rather unusual and unremarkable warning that it gives pretty much every year against charging over public USB ports. We passed it along because we thought, hey, this is a good reminder that those things can be compromised. Now, that warning isn't bad, or I wouldn't have said, let's put it in the show. It's not a bad warning. You should be wary of those ports. But every local news outlet in the U.S. jumped on it this time as a new trend, probably because the FCC issued their regular warning and the FBI tweeted it. And then the FCC saw everybody talking about the tweet. So the FCC issued theirs again. And then the local news was all over it. But it's not new, nor is it a trend. Gooden points out that you probably don't need to worry about it unless you're a target of a nation state hacker. There are no documented cases of juice jacking ever taking place in the wild. They've taken place at DEF CON, very famously, to prove the concept. But no one's caught anyone actually doing this out in an airport. Most Android and iOS phones now warn if an external device wants to send you files or copy yours. That's because of the demos they did at DEF CON, which is why you do those demos at DEF CON, to raise awareness about how to defend against these attacks. So what Dan was saying is, like, sure, should you be wary? Yes. If you're down to 2% and you're in an airport and you only have your USB cable, should you not charge your phone? No, you're probably fine charging your phone. I look at this as the equivalent of, like, yeah, if you've got an alternative to SMS for your second factor, use it, because SMS isn't great. But if you don't have any other choice, SMS as a second factor is better than no second factor at all. Chris, what do you think about this? Is the warning itself a bad idea?
Well, it sounds like what Dan is saying is that your data is not that interesting.
it's that the risk is incredibly low because no one's ever done it. And you probably won't be the target the first time somebody tries. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but on a more serious note, I agree that the likelihood of this happening to the regular person, probably not so much, because not only are they going to have to hack the station where you plug into, they're going to have to figure out how to make you plug into that station in the first place, unless they just want random people. But with that said, the one aspect of, that I do like that this is being reported and put out there is the ability to allow folks to stay on their toes. You know, oftentimes I call people that listen to this show and other tech shows that they are the help desk for their family members. And it's hard to keep them vigilant on protecting their data and their information. So when you have a story like this that kind of pops and people may come across it, it does serve as a means for people to just not trust everything you do with your phone and with your computers and stuff like that. So for that perspective alone, I'm okay with them probably overdoing
sort
it
of the halo effect story. Of it, right?
Yeah.
This for me is like it's about understanding your threat surface, right? Because it's like if you try and account for like every possible vulnerability, you're either going to be like paralyzed by indecision, or you're going to be worried about something like this, which is an extremely low probability event, and miss the phishing email that just landed. You've got to be thinking about, okay, let's guard against time to your point. Okay. SMS two-factor authentication is flawed, still better than nothing. So it's like, okay, let's take the most table stakes stuff out. And the problem with these warnings is it can make, you know, when people that aren't necessarily tech savvy or something like that can read that, they can think, I can't do anything. I can't even charge my phone. And it leads to that kind of like resignation in a weird way. It's about understanding like where you're probably going to be compromised is like, it's definitely going to be an email you clicked on, or it's going to be, you know, a password you reused. It's not going to
prioritize properly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, folks, if you have a thought about this or anything we talk about on the show, send us an email, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Geoffrey Hinton was born at Wimbledon, graduated King's College, Cambridge in 1970, got an experimental psychology degree, worked on some of the most important algorithms used in neural networks, and won a Turing Award. Geoffrey Hinton, it looms large in the history of the development of what we call AI. He teaches at the University of Toronto now, and in 2013, Google bought his research company. You probably heard about that research company. They're the ones that made AlexNet. In 2012, AlexNet got a lot of attention as the neural network that could recognize cats and dogs and flowers. Seems kind of quaint now, given what we can do, but it was a big deal at the time. It was pivotal in Google's development of Transformers. That's the T in GPT, and that led to Google Bard, ChatGPT, and more.
Hinton just left Google Monday in order to, in his words, freely speak about the risks of AI without having to consider how his comments will or won't affect Google. Now, Hinton says he believes Google has acted very responsibly, but he told the New York Times that the competition between Bing's chatbot and Google's Bard has him worried. The intense competition might cause the companies to disregard consequences and lead to a world where nobody will be able to tell what's true anymore. And longer term, he fears that AI could eliminate jobs and possibly the need for humanity itself, as AI can write and run its own code.
Yeah, he also told the New York Times that he thinks scientists should be working just as hard on ways to control AI, saying, I don't think they should scale this up more until they have understood whether they can control it. So this is a pretty, you know, large, looming, respected voice in AI that's sounding a little worried. Is this the time we pay attention to this type of warning? Chris, is your radar up?
My radar is definitely up, and it's up all over the place, because when I see something like this, my first inclination is to challenge the person and saying, okay, you're the one who helped invent this. So while you invented this, you never saw any of these possibilities as a thing. You just saw it now when it doesn't make any sense to me. But I can
address that if you want. Yeah, I've got an idea on
absolutely.
That. Because of what are some of the things that he said here is that I thought it was progressing too slowly. He says, yes, I always knew there would be risks. And he's not saying we should stop developing it. He's saying we should develop for the consequences. But it is recently that he has noticed that something he thought, and he says this in his interview with the New York Times, something he thought was 20 or 30 years down the road has become closer. So it's not that he didn't know the risks. He thought the risks were worthwhile, that they could guard against them, and they were coming farther down the road. Now he's worried that the risks are happening faster than he expected and at a time when nobody is paying attention to the consequences.
Is this – I have a question about this, because is this Hinton – he is an academic. Like, that is his background. Entrepreneur, sure, has started companies and stuff like that, but he is an academic. So his interest is in – advancing the science of this, right? And his problem is the kind of the rubber meeting the road here, right? Is the competition and the result of this technology operating where people are rapidly trying to productize that? Like, does that explain any of his kind of, like, does that, I guess, diminish his worry about that? Or is that, like, surprising that someone who is supremely smart, I guess, like, is kind of realizing the effects of this market competition at this point?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So essentially they're asking, is that a valid motivation? Is his motivations pure, I think? And when I started going through his what he was saying and what he was repeating and some of his history, it kind of led me to give him the credibility, at least up front. You know, one, he was offered a job or to take money from the DOD to send his technology to them. He turned it down, which a lot of people wouldn't have done. And he says he does not believe in using AI for war machines. So I was like, okay, you know, game on. And then on top of that, he had a ton of comments. He held his comments as to not have them hindered by having to worry about how they would affect Google, which I thought is also a honorable thing to do. So when I put those two pieces together, I think he's pretty honorable in his worries. Now, you know, is he overreacting? I don't know, but I like the fact that the guy that invented it is actually concerned and putting those concerns out publicly instead of behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think it, I mean, he's also 75. So at a certain point he may realize, you know what, it's better for me to get on the record now than to spend the rest of my life in silence. And there's plenty of younger minds that are doing great things that can pick up the baton now. I don't feel like I'm leaving the discipline in the lurch, because again, he's saying, look at how it was 5 years ago and how it is now. Take the difference and propagate it forwards. That's scary.
Right.
As I get older, I realize that you start to think like, oh, I don't have a whole lot of time left and things are moving faster than when I was young kind of attitude. The counter to that is what OpenAI's Sam Altman has been saying, which is we're about to hit a plateau. It won't keep getting better at the same rate that it has been getting better. So I'm not saying one of them is right and one of them is wrong. Again, because I think what he is doing here, what Hinton is doing here, is not saying let's stop. He's saying we need to be working on how to counter this stuff. We should not be stopping working on it, but we shouldn't only be pushing it forward. We should also be working on the safeguards at the same time. And that's what he's not seeing enough of.
And that aspect alone, I find that that's extremely important, and only for the fact that we do not have a great history of our politicians regulating technology properly, right? In fact, we watch some of these interviews and it's clear they have no idea what they're seeing and what's going on and how to talk about it. So, you know, raising these type of alarms and to Microsoft and Google's credit, they have started putting out there and saying, hey, you guys need to regulate this stuff. So to their credit, you know, I think it is a positive thing overall to start, you know, getting people aware that we should start looking at this.
I think it's significant that Hinton didn't sign either of those letters warning of the risk. Yes. Now, he was still at Google at the time.
Yes.
But he is taking a more nuanced approach to this.
And he could have come out in this interview, like, if he wanted to be like, I wanted to sign on to it, I didn't, because he could have very easily have said that. I do wonder, Tom, to your point of, you know, kind of reaching a point in your career and in your life and kind of looking back at it, I do wonder if this is a realization. Obviously, AI development, like this, like tons of money in this for years now at this point. He's certainly obviously aware of that. But kind of this idea of this specific generative AI going from going to almost kind of like a multimodal kind of arrangement, right? Where he was at the forefront of this. He was the leader in this for decades, right? Like at the absolute forefront, bleeding edge. And not to say that Google is not still there, but that there are now numerous other parties. And it's one thing when you're at the bleeding edge and you are leading it and you realize, like, I have a grasp of what I think are the moral implications of this or whatever. And then to realize I am dealing now with not just other researchers, but other companies that have, you know, agendas that I don't know about. He's very clear to say Google has been a good steward of AI up until this point, up until I'm leaving the company, basically. But it's not just Google, right?
So Ken Worf 04 has a good way of putting it. You should know how to stop the train you started.
Yeah. Speaking of the hype train, too.
Nice one. Yeah.
Two.
All right. Well, late last month, the journal Publications of the National Academy of Sciences, one of my favorite of the publications, published a paper detailing the world's first wooden transistor. Don't take wooden nickels, but you can accept a wooden transistor. It was created by researchers at the Wallenberg Wood Science Center in Stockholm, Sweden. The researchers created conductive channels inside the pores of balsa wood and used a penetrating electrolyte to modulate its conductivity. Now, don't expect to see this in a laptop with turbo boost clocks anytime soon. It's pretty big. It's about 3 centimeters across and switches at less than 1 hertz as opposed to, like, you know, gigahertz. This being, though, a proof of principle design, the researchers do say smaller transistors with higher currents should be possible. You know, and it could find uses in simple things like on-off switches for solar cells or sensors. And it could be incorporated into wood products, living plants, some, you know, like biodegradable tech. Might be a lot more feasible with wooden transistors.
Yeah. It's some stuff that could look nicer too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Home security stuff, transistors that are wood could, I don't know if they'll get this fast enough to be able to do anything like that, but it's certainly interesting that they can do it at all. And I think that's what this paper is about, right?
Yeah. You know what? If I can get a better pepper out of my garden, then I'm all for it.
Now I just want IKEA to make one like that looks mid-century modern, and that would be perfect.
Yeah, and they will. All right, let's check out the mailbag.
Yeah, Matt Batt wrote in regarding the story that GM is ending its Chevy Bolt line. He wrote in and said, the good news is that there isn't much that breaks on an EV. So in a few years, hopefully the people who are looking for a commuter EV instead of an ego stroker will be able to buy a, quote, unfashionable old EV at an affordable price. And he says an internal combustion engine is a Rube Goldberg monstrosity in comparison to the simplicity of an EV.
This is a great point. If you are someone who wants a more affordable electric vehicle, you might be looking for a used Chevy Bolt. Although I don't know, the prices might be up since they don't make them anymore.
And I will say, at least anecdotally, my brother owns a Bolt and my Uber driver on the way home from CES picked me up in a Bolt. And they both complained that not the EV stuff, but that the, like, GM car components are very specific to that car and supply has been an issue. Now, we've been a supply chain hellscape, so, you know, full context there. But, you know, going out of production, what feels like maybe a little short, maybe for that kind of stuff, might be hard to find components going down the road. We don't know.
Yeah. The good news is, you know, they have the truck coming out soon. They have the Equinox come out as well. The Equinox looks pretty awesome. From what I've seen so far in the early picture. So it's not, you know, I'm okay with them dropping the Bolt.
That's because you drive a truck, though. What about a sedan drivers, Chris?
Free charging. That's my answer to everything.
Free charging. Mic drop. All right. Thank you, Chris Ashley, for being with us. Of course, as always, let the folks know what you have got going on these days.
Yo, come check me out on Barbecue and Tech, especially this week because we had an awesome interview with a young fella who started a food barbecue food truck with his family, and just the ins and outs of how they got started and some of the challenges that they go through to make that happen. So yeah, definitely check out this episode. It was really, really cool and a lot of fun.
I really enjoyed that episode, partly because I've eaten at a bunch of food trucks and it just kind of opened my eyes to what goes into making them and why you make them and stuff. It's an excellent, excellent episode. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. We had a lot of fun doing that one.
Well, we are dancing for joy because we have a stately quadrille of new bosses to thank here on Monday. That's right. Lewis, Ryan, Conrad, and Justin all joined the patron ranks. They started backing us on Patreon. So get on your dancing shoes and thank Lewis, Ryan, Conrad, and Justin. You rock.
Woo! Wow, we got four over the weekend. There were only 3 days.
Mm.
I don't know what y'all said on Friday.
Double up.
Yeah. Well done. All right. Those four people are now patrons. All the rest of the patrons are going to welcome them into the club. Big, you know, pats on the back and smiles. And they get the extended show. They get the longer version. Good Day Internet, where today we're going to talk about the fall of Paparazzi, yet another authentic social network that is closing shop. And we're going to talk about whether we're finding out that maybe people really don't like authenticity as much as they say they do.
And your weekend, right?
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about what I ate on Friday. Yes. Or Saturday. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, remember, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We'll be back tomorrow talking about a black innovator in the AI space with Nika Montford. I can't wait. We'll see you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
All right, folks. Rich is going to pick the DTNS title based on the suggestions you've been making. So get your votes in real fast at showbot.tv/DTNS so he can pick himself a good one. While he does that, though, yeah, my training from barbecue and tech came into play this weekend because I haven't smoked any meats, but I walk, we're doing a bunch of stuff for family stuff in Greenville. It's a hard day, a long day. Me and my sister are sweaty. We come back to her place and her husband, is making, well, he's got a smoker. And I recognize that it's a smoker because I listen to barbecue and tech. So I take a picture of it and I send it to Chris. I was like, what do you think of this smoker? My brother-in-law is telling me all these things that I understand only because I've listened to barbecue and tech. I've never done any of them. But he's talking about condensation and he's talking about smoke and he's talking about bark and all this stuff. And Chris, I felt so smart because he's saying these things and I'm like, I don't have any experience with this, but I know what you mean by these things. And so I was sending Chris pictures and he was making comments. I appreciate you entertaining me as I lived vicariously through my brother-in-law.
Listen, you ever want to make sure you have a conversation. Like, I'm bored. Let me talk to Chris. You start out a picture with a nice, beautiful looking brisket and we're going for the next half an hour, which we did.
I got a little distracted and I forgot to send you the picture of it cut.
Yes.
And
that was the last piece, and I forgot to ask for it, but it was a gorgeous. He did a great job on it. I could tell he put in a lot of care into the trimming of it because it had some great dynamics, aerodynamics to it. So I was like, wow. And I was familiar. I've seen that smoker before, so I knew what type of smoker it was right out of the gate.
Well, the best part was he was talking about all his experimentation of like, well, I tried this, and then that didn't work, and so then I adjusted this, and I was like, I feel like I'm listening like to an episode because that's exactly what Rod and Chris talk about. In the end, he thought that the point turned out great, but the flat, he wanted a little more pull. Is that the right word?
Sure. Yeah. So essentially there's two sides. And this is the thing when we talk about, you know, briskets, and it is such a very fine line, whether it's good or trash. And so, you know, if you can get that slice off of either the point or the flat, and then you can just drape it over a knife and it can just hang there. But when you pull it, it just gives you a little pull and then it comes apart as opposed to just crumbling. Mm-hmm. Then you know you hit it, right? And so he probably might have went a little over, I'm guessing maybe. But the point is like that chubbier part in the front of it. And that's the, that has way more fat in it. So that's, that comes out, usually comes out really, really good.
Also, he's fat side down.
God, this guy. And
he tried to tell me that it's because that, that is a vertical smoker.
It's where his heat source
like,
comes from.
And, right? And so he's like, I think the fat side up, fat side down debate applies more to the, when the air is coming in parallel versus up. And I was like, I'm not even going to pretend to try to get into that argument. You could go. I'll give you Chris's address.
Right. Tell him, come talk to me. Yeah. Like, no, that's right. So generally a lot of folks will tell you that, you know, you put the fat towards the heat to protect the brisket. And so fat side down. Sure. It makes sense. I just, for me personally, it's always up.
All right. The photo sharing app Paparazzi announced that it's shutting down. You have until June 30th to download your content. If you don't know, that's the app that let you post photos to your friends' feed, right? You didn't post photos to your own feed. You tagged your friends, and then those photos showed up in their feeds. And same to you. You'd get tagged in friends' posts, and they would show up in yours. The idea was that you didn't try to stage things. It was just all a very friendly, like, you know, this is just us hanging out. This isn't Instagram. This isn't trying to show off. Very similar in concept to Be Real, which has a different way of approaching it. This is a swift fall from grace for a once popular app. It hit the top of the App Store in 2021, reported more than 5 million installs last year, and was tied to Be Real as part of the authentic social media movement. So with Be Real trying to add a few more ways to keep people engaged, and maybe that usership is leveled off, Paparazzi shutting down.
That's a wrap.
We like authenticity, and then when we get it, we're like, yeah, but that's not very fun. But,
so to me, this, if I'm talking about authenticity on a social media platform, I'm not talking about the what people are posting. Because, you know, people like to post silly things. I'm talking about whether the person posting is real and they're a real person as opposed to the content that they're posting. So that's why I struggle to understand why this thing was popular in the first place. You know what I mean? Because if I see some influencer post something, I'm pretty confident. I'm like, yeah, you're just peddling something. You know what I mean? As opposed to if a friend posts something like, oh, they look like they had a great time. You know what I mean?
I think the authenticity movement is a reaction not just to influencers, partly that, but also your friends posting the perfect picture, right? Mm-hmm. And you've seen people do that where they're like, hold on, let me get in the right place and let me make sure the sun is at the right angle and like, give me a second. All right, take the picture. Let me, oh no, hold on. Can you move it over the, that sort of staging of a moment that when you're just scrolling through Instagram, like, oh my gosh, their life is so amazing. Cause you don't see all the arranging that went into it. And these Paparazzi and Be Real are like, let's get rid of that. Let's just show what's actually going on.
Yeah.
The whole like anti-solipsism of it, where it's like you're composed of what other people think about you, is like this very, like, the idea of it is...
Are you going to say Hegelian? I feel like you're about to say Hegelian.
I was just going to say vaguely upsetting. Like the fact that... like, because I know Paparazzi had tools where it's like, obviously, if someone tags you in something that's you don't like, you can take it down. Like, you don't have to have that on your profile. So, but like, just... But the idea that you have no control over it, that it's just... Like I thought about this. The closest I could think of this was actually LinkedIn when it comes to, like, people, like, giving you recommendations on skill. Like, but just imagine, like, this for, like, LinkedIn, where it's like... Oh yeah, Rich is skilled at Microsoft Word, but you know, he's like terrible at Excel or so. Like, handing that off feels so weird when we're so used to, even on Be Real, it's there's a little bit of a curation experience. Like, if you're selfie
they
one,
just
like, totally.
Announced a curated feed.
Yeah,
today.
So like,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, that feels, and also like, because I signed up for it, or I was checking out Paparazzi when I checked out Be Real, seeing that protocol story that we linked to from last year. That's like where I first heard about both of these. And Be Real had this very like chill kind of just being like, just post whatever's happening. It's no big deal. Like, we're good. Like, I like the vibe of Be Real, whereas Paparazzi was very much like, be like an influencer with your, like, you got to catch your friends. Yeah, you got to, you know, it was like really a lot of pressure to like, obviously you don't have a feed unless you have friends. But like, the vibe of it was very much, I don't know, maybe skewed not to my sensibilities.
So I think this weighs in. Hold on a second, Chris. I just yeah. have to put this out. This is the Be Real feature that just rolled out. It's called Real People. Mm-hmm. It is a curated timeline of the world's most interesting people, including updates from athletes, artists, activists, and other notable users.
So Be Real is dead.
All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
I guess to me, the problem is this thing is solving a problem that I don't really see as a problem, right? I don't see influencers as an issue per se. As long as people continue to understand what influencers do, then it shouldn't be an issue. So, and for my kid, she's still asking me why she can't get on social media. I was like, because there's influencers on there. So I don't know. I just don't see it as a problem. My biggest problem is, you know, understanding what's real and what's not real. And that's something I would like to see these companies address. Like if they were a tag on to a platform that already exists where you can say, yeah, that account is real aside from the destruction of the blue check mark. But I have a friend.
That is a different problem than what the Be Real. I take it back. Be Real is trying to say like these aren't perfect product recommendations or ads disguised as posts sort of thing. So yeah, they are addressing that.
Yeah, because I have a close friend whose account was hacked on Facebook and they immediately took the account over and started grifting people for money, you know. And so a system that addresses that is to me much more important than, hey, this is the real picture and the real, forget all the setup and stuff. Because honestly, to me, the setup of some pictures is part of the experience of getting that picture and the fun of the occasion too. But I get what you're saying.
Don't discount the people who are like, yeah, but it makes me feel bad when I scroll through Instagram and everybody's beautiful, everybody's having a great time. And these aren't influencers. These are just, regular people, but they look like their lives are perfect. And I want something where I just see people doing regular everyday things. That seems to be the motivation. Rich, am I getting it right?
I think so. At least for me also, Be Real has an endpoint, and I cannot tell you how incredibly valuable that is for an app, like a social app experience. Like, yeah, like you can't, it's not even doom scrolling. Like it's the reason like I really don't use Reddit anymore is not because I wasn't enjoying it, but it was like, I would look back at like the things I would like upvote and I've been like, What did I get? Like, I'm just like distracting myself from the fact that existence ends at some point. Like, that's literally all I'm doing at this. Like, I was like, what am I doing? Like, so like, Be Real. It's like, that's also why I like the lack of algorithm on Mastodon. It's like, it feels like there's an endpoint at some point where it's not just going to keep serving me because it knows that's what the network's job
right,
is.
Right. Yeah.
And I realized like, that's probably going to Be Real obviously doesn't want that anymore because they're like, eyeballs also probably ads are coming or Be Real Plus is coming very soon. So like we're going to monetize somehow profit step three. So I realized it was a noble dream that is now slowly dying, but I enjoyed it for what it was.
It's not Be Real's not dead yet.
I'm not saying it isn't, but
I'm just thinking it survives by not being real.
Well, it survives by not being the thing that having the infinite scroll of being like, oh, look, Travis Kelce's barbecue. That's fantastic. All right. I'm going to give that a reaction. Like,
well, and they also talked about on the show, they added the feature where if you take your Be Real within the 2-minute allotment, you get two others that you can stage later in the day
to give you a little bit more scrollability. Yeah. I don't mind it because it's not shoving that in your face. I almost think it's like a failure of UI from them. Because it's like hard to see if people have extra B-reels and it's clunky to scroll through, which means I will scroll the same as I always have, which I appreciate, but I realize it's probably a bad app design. But I still B-reel. Just be like boring and limited. That's what I love about you.
Like we can't get this scrolling working. We got to release tomorrow.
Rich has the worst user metrics. Why are we catering to him? Oh, no.
I feel like advertising, the algorithm, and authenticity all share a similar attitude where everyone says, no, 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 I don't want the algorithm to recommend things. No, 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 I want authenticity. No, 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 I don't like advertising. And the fact of the matter is, advertising works. Otherwise, people wouldn't spend money on it. Right. It probably doesn't work as well as advertisers sometimes think it does, but it does work, or the amount of money spent on advertising, the industry would not be so huge if it didn't work at all. So yeah, advertising works on you. You don't want authenticity. You want to be entertained. When you see true authenticity, you're talking the picture that Ethan Cain put on Be Real yesterday, where it was very clear which room in his house he was in. And it was funny that time, trust me. But
but he waits every time.
But if it's not disturbing. Someone you know, and it's not as tastefully framed as it was, then I think people are like, no, I want to see the pretty pictures. And the algorithm the same way. A lot of people say, no, I want a regular timeline, but then they get bored with it. Which I know, Rich, you were pointing out is also a positive, I guess.
Yeah, I also admit, like, fully admit, like, I'm like, oh, this is too entertaining to me. I need to take this off my phone is usually my instinct. Like, I'm right about there with YouTube now. I'm like, YouTube, you're like Weird Mirror in Harry Potter. I need to delete you now because Dumbledore needs to hide you so I can't find you anymore.
Yeah.
I'm out of here.
I love YouTube now.
It's amazing. Like, it truly, like, I look at my history. I'm like, what did I do here? Why did I watch 5 hours of modular synth videos? This was useless.
Well, that's so funny about you when you talk about algorithms and being presented with stuff is I find myself not wanting to click on a video for I don't want it to destroy my recommendations.
Incognito window so I can. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not. No, we're not talking about anything dirty or nefarious.
No,
like, you know what? I wanna look at a car video this one time, but I do not want to be filled with car videos the next time I go to YouTube.
Or I'm looking for like this one Star Trek clip, but if I click this, I'm gonna get every Star Trek pot. Exactly. I'm like, no, I don't want that. I just want to see that one thing from Pale Moonlight. We're good.
It just seems like never fails. You click this something once, and that's it. I was like, oh, you like shoes?
You need the algorithm exception.
What a delicious looking barrel of peaches on a peach farm. Here are all the fruit farms in the world.
No, I don't. Yeah. Here's how to get started growing your own.
I actually thought about this, and if YouTube had a way that you could look back at what the algorithm was serving you, like the factors, it was like, you know, the cards or MMA fights for me, you know, and you could like scroll back and be like, okay, revert my algorithm to this point, go.
Yeah, you know,
restore point.
Yeah. you'd be able to like see the trends that you were searching for, and you were like, that would be fun, interesting data for me as a user to see of myself. That would be great. And then if I could also like, let's go back 2 weeks before I got on this little
tangent here.
This Gran Turismo tangent. I want my feed not to have Gran Turismo in it anymore. Let's go back to there and then scoot forward.
That would be helpful because I often forget that I'm logged into the Daily Tech News Show YouTube when I watch something.
Yep.
And then my, you know, Le Seraphim Unforgiven premiere video affects the DNS algorithm so that everyone else using that account sees a bunch of K-pop videos.
And this is why there's a bunch of MMA videos on the DTNS account.
Yeah, the DTNS account is mostly MMA videos and K-pop because of me and Ed.
Well, I'll do my part and put some modular synth in there.
And there's a little modular synth
there. There you go.
Yeah. That's weird. Yep. Okay. Yeah, we need Apple Time Machine or ZFS for YouTube algorithms. Just
that would be great. Yeah, that'd be
now,
awesome.
Now, on the other side of that, I can't explain why I get so much joy out of taking 10 minutes and saying, Don't recommend channel. Not interested. Tell us why. Don't worry about why.
That feeling
just don't
of control. Yeah,
that,
yeah.
It's that power to like, don't, you know, when you just like, oh, I'm going to go through and, you know, fix this feed up a little bit.
I've also noticed this is maybe particular to YouTube, but I watch YouTube on my computer. It's my main source of entertainment throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And I get fed certain videos. And then I look on my phone and I get fed entirely different videos. But then at night, since I live basically by myself, I have a habit of watching YouTube videos that are true crime stories while I'm getting my shower and getting ready for bed. I just play it on my phone in the bathroom. At night, my phone will invariably tell me, hey, here's a new true crime video for you to watch because, you know, it's that time and this is that device and this is what you do around midnight every night.
All of these ingredients have the Venn diagram.
So YouTube's like, hey, here's the new ones.
Okay. Lion Jim Video, he's struck a good idea here in the chat. He says, ChatGPT, please edit my news feed to fake a beautiful life. What we need, though, is not necessarily that, but you guys know what a Pi Hole is, the little Raspberry Pi app?
Yeah.
It basically is like an ad sinkhole you can set up on your network. So we need that, but for ChatGPT, be like, this is the output that I want. You just do all the scrolling so that I just have a nice curated whatever algorithmic feed you need. ChatGPT, you just do it, and then I just want to enjoy the fruits of your labor. Like, I just want all my TikTok to just be like cats knocking over like paper towel rolls or something like that. Like, that's all I want. Get on it.
I do like using the algorithm as a kind of a proxy for what's on the bookshelf. You know, when you go to somebody's house and you're like, "Ooh, what books are on your bookshelf?"
Oh yeah.
Like, would you all be willing to read your top 9 algorithm YouTube recommendations?
Sure. Let's do this.
No pressure. I have
no pride left to bruise.
Chris, what about you?
All right, here we go.
All right.
Clip from the David Pakman show.
Okay.
And then it's a Destiny lore video that dropped two hours ago. Let's see. Another Ring of Fire, which is more politics and indisputable politics. Okay. Don Andre investigation, which is a kind of like the cop watcher.
That's when the algorithm gets you. You're like, oh, yeah. I'll have to remember to look at that.
I'm going
to
check that one out. Another Destiny 2 video, and rounding it off, a woodworking video on building a router table, which I'm working on right now.
Yeah.
Not bad. So right here on the top of the screen, not bad.
This gives me an idea. I wonder if we should do screenshots of the YouTube algorithm and then like guess who they belong to.
No fair.
If I saw Destiny at woodworking, I'd be like, that's Chris Ashley.
Send us your YouTube. All right, here we go. Here we go. Top recommendation for me. This is a bad one. YouTube, you've done bad. Arturia Drum Brute Impact and Micro Freak Jam. It's like a synth jam session. Okay. I hate weird synth jam sessions. I don't know why it's
that
there.
Tracks.
Leica M11 monochrome review, more money for no color from Petapixel. DP review guys now on Petapixel. So looking good there. I don't even know what this means. It's like audio. Quad chimps with Grandmaster Ninja throwback WOF day 39 balloons TD6. I don't know what has 935 views. I don't know what this is. Half in the bag, Evil Dead Rise. I will definitely be watching that later from Red Letter Media. Film Lab Desktop 2.5. How does it compare to Negative Lab Pro? Negative film negative conversion software video. I will definitely be watching that. How to fix waiting mode ADHD symptom solutions. Maybe I probably need it. That's what YouTube's telling me something. Very awkward.
You need that
here.
Doctor ChatGPT.
Organizing your negatives from The Naked Photographer, one of my favorites, so I'm definitely want to check that out. And Massive Wavetable Polysynth Third Wave Sonic Lab Review. Ooh, I'm interested. It looks pretty, so I'll click on.
Now that we know that there's enough synthwave stuff, if I see that, I would be able to recognize your algorithm.
But like cameras, Red Letter Media.
Yeah, yeah. Red Letter Media, I didn't realize. I wouldn't have predicted that. That's good to know.
I'm a stan.
Yeah, all right.
I have a NASCAR recap from yesterday's race, a NASCAR highlight film of T-Bone's crashes. I got two MMA films. I got some Gran Turismo and a couple of Professor of Rock type videos about behind the scenes from the music industry. And of course, some soccer revenge videos and two movie breakdowns.
Yeah. I would see the NASCAR and MMA and think it was you, and then I'd see the soccer and know it was you.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. I've got Unforgiven featuring Nile Rodgers by Le Sserafim, Chord Killers Spoiler in Time, The Sick Show interviewing Vernon and Joshua from 17, Hunger Games The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes official trailer, Taeyong Shung featuring Lisa of Blackpink dance practice video, and behind the scenes interview from part one of Crazy Chemistry, That's Insane.
All right.
Is that a solid list for you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. I would say out of the top, there's 12 videos on top of my screen. Out of those 12, I would probably watch about 9 of them. So it's a pretty good hit. That's 75% hit rate.
Yeah, I'm watching all the ones online. Every one of them.
I scrolled down a little farther, and I got Patrick Stewart on Frank Sinatra being a Star Trek fan from Jimmy Kimmel. Like that should have been higher up. Come on.
Yeah. I'm shocked I did not get any wrestling in my top, because that is now my shorts very wrestling heavy, but alas, not.
Does that mean you watch more wrestling shorts than other things?
I watched one, and that's the only short I've ever watched, I think. So probably that's why I think
so. So here's a question for you guys. Do you find that your shorts mess up your algorithm for your regular YouTube watching?
That would assume not that yet. I watched them.
I have not noticed that. And I do watch them sparingly, so maybe that's why.
Okay. So my watching habit for shorts is I'll just go on a binge. So I'll just like click, 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 click. And, you know, 30 minutes later, I'm like, all right, I got to get back to work. But then I find that like all my suggestions are way off. And I just got to go back and be like, don't recommend channel. Not interested. And then things kind of even themselves back out.
I was trying to find more wrestling related shorts, but you can't like filter them in search. I was just like, I just want to see like RKOs, like give me just a bunch of RKO videos, like 1 minute video. I was like, that's great. Or whatever, you know? And then like, you can't, like you can get the videos, no problem. You cannot, because I know they want the TikTok thing where it's, you're scrolling through and you're
right.
That's how they want you to interact with it. But I'm like, I'm an old man. Just let me search.
I don't know.
Yeah, I scroll below the line and I've got, it's all photography at that point. Like they didn't give me photography to the top. They were like, oh, we know you're going to scroll down. We're going to see this.
I like this idea of screenshots of people's YouTube homepage and then you have to guess who it is.
That's your B-reel right there.
Yeah.
There's just no chance that I'm not immediately picked out of this. You know, cause I'm scrolling down. Here comes the barbecue videos and the cooking videos and more Destiny.
Once you get below that top line, that shorts line right there, it's kind of like it gets a little personal. It's not suggesting things anymore. It's like, no, we know.
We know. Yeah. Come on, click it. Just matter of time.
And also, because I have YouTube on the smart TV, when the in-laws come over and all of a sudden they're watching, it's like, oh man, I need a timeout.
You know, a really fun one is the not logged in account at a hotel if it has the YouTube app.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Because it's trying to create a personality out of every guest who's used it.
Yeah, I remember the moment I found out you could delete your Netflix history or delete things you watched out of your Netflix history, because certainly there are some people that were barring my account everything was jacked up and I was like, oh, you can go in and this is
clean
awesome.
It out. Yeah. All right, let's thank the folks who make this show possible, the patrons. We got a raise from Russell. Thank you for that. We got a raise from Nick. Thank you for that. We got Andy as a new patron. We got a raise from Kevin, who went yearly. This is amazing. It's good to have folks coming in at the beginning of the month. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you all. We couldn't do the video version of this, the Twitch live stream, without the Twitch folks. Klang8188 followed us. GPEG84 resubscribed tier one for the 39th month. Paley Glendale giving out another community subscription gift. We got some bits from Technomensch, Brian M64, Zoe Brings Bacon. Thank you all. Love those heart emojis. Is that a unicorn heart emoji? Wow. Thank you, Technomensch. That's excellent. And thank you, Chris Ashley, for being with us, man.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Love hanging out with you guys anytime, any place.
And thank you for entertaining my brisket messages over the weekend.
I was like, Tom, what's he doing? Oh,
brisket, you say?
Cancel my afternoon.
Until tomorrow, everybody, have a good day.
Have a super sparkly day.
Good day.